Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So President Biden delivering an address to the nation yesterday afternoon, again, trying to sort of update and clarify what the administration's policy is with respect to Afghanistan, primarily focused, as it should be, on what the Biden administration will do to extract Americans and Afghan allies from that country. And, of course, over the last week, we've gone from the initial State Department missive to Americans, please make your way to Hamid Karzai International Airport at this time. That was the beginning of last week.
And then they were charging, what, $2,000 for some safe passage to get to the airport?
And the argument that was advanced at the time by Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff Milley, by SecDef Austin, working with the Taliban to ensure safe passage. Then on Saturday, this past Saturday, you had a message from the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. Because of potential security threats, we're advising U.S. citizens to avoid traveling to the airport. Go to the airport.
Don't go
five
to the
days
airport.
Ago. Don't go to the airport. Not safe. We're working with the Taliban. We have to work with the Taliban. Anybody who wants to get to the airport can get to the airport. And that was the story on Friday. Before we even get to what he said Sunday, just I think the evolution of this is important to understand, well, to get some answers to some of the questions about preparedness, the decision-making, the mission focus, a lot of questions about that, and then also how much you can trust what they're saying now, including what the president had to say yesterday. So then on Friday, you had the anybody who can get to the airport, anybody who wants to get to the airport can get to the airport. That was the position before Saturday's U.S. Embassy, don't go to the airport. Except Saturday, they had to say don't go to the airport, in part because of the reporting on Friday after the anybody who wants to get to the airport can get to the airport and Biden's announcement that any American who wants to leave will be extracted. So this is the reporting on ABC. David Muir, the anchor there, talking to his correspondent on the ground in Kabul, Ian Parnell.
The president said he has no intelligence that Americans have been unable to get there. The question, obviously, does that square with reporting on the ground?
I mean, just totally not. I mean, the reaction was pretty much one of I mean, it was breathtaking. No indication Americans can't get to the airport. I mean, last night on World News, we had American citizens who had exactly that experience. They tried to get to the airport. They had waived their American passports. The president talked about all they had to do was present their passports and they'd be allowed through. They were beaten by the Taliban with the rubber fan belt from a vehicle. Multiple examples of Americans and Afghans, SIV applicants, who have now tried repeatedly. There's one woman we're tracking. She's back at the airport tonight. This is her third night in the row. Gates haven't opened. The Taliban haven't let her through. It just seems the reality and the rhetoric are miles apart. I'm not quite sure what advice the president's receiving, but the truth on the ground is that these people who are in fear of their lives can't get through.
Mm-hmm. The description of the beatings that some Americans, perhaps others, were taking trying to get to the airport that you heard from ABC News, that was acknowledged. Well, that was acknowledged in part by SecDef Austin in his sit down with Martha Raddatz on Sunday. Listen to how he describes what you just heard reported by ABC.
If you have an American passport and if you have the right credentials, the Taliban has been allowing people to pass safely through.
Not in all cases.
there's no such thing as an absolute in this kind of environment, as you would imagine, Martha. There have been incidents of people, having some tough encounters with Taliban.
Tough encounters.
Tough encounters are flogging people.
Please head to the airport, but be prepared for tough encounters with the Taliban.
Where are our priorities? I mean, are we prioritizing getting American citizens out? Because it looks like we're getting Afghan civilians out first. Or anybody who can make it to the airport. Because every time they open the gate stand to the airport, hundreds of people flood in. And there's not enough military personnel there to stop them.
Well, so this was Biden's charge yesterday, in part, is to give us a handle on where evacuations stand.
But do you believe him?
What's been set up? How many people have been evacuated? What is the sort of process of evacuation? And he described that in some detail. But here's what he says are the numbers of evacuations to date, on the numbers on evacuations to date.
As of this morning, we have evacuated nearly 28,000 people since August the 14th on both U.S. and coalition aircraft, including civilian charters, bringing the total number of people we've evacuated since July to approximately 33,000 persons. In one 24-hour period this weekend, 23 U.S. military flights, including 14 C-17s, 9 C-130 flights, left Kabul carrying 3,900 passengers. We see no reason why this tempo will not be kept up. During the same period, our military facilitated another 35 charter flights, carrying an additional 4,000 evacuees to other countries that are taking them out. Altogether, we lifted approximately 11,000 people out of Kabul in less than 36 hours.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Got that?
So if that's going so well, and as he said, there's no reason to suggest that this pace won't keep up, then how do you square his answer to one of the three questions that he took, finally, on extending the 831 deadline as needed if not everybody's out who needs to get out?
There's discussions going on among us and the military about extending. Our hope is we will not have to extend, but there are going to be discussions, I suspect, on how far along we are in the process.
And that's the same thing Austin said with Raddatz on Sunday. But wait a second. So if everything is going peachy keen, according to plan, even though Biden also said in the same breath, sort of like Austin, but there's still a long way to go, and it might not all go smoothly, as if everything up to this point has gone flawlessly. Oh, it's the possibility that at some point this might not go smoothly. It's been going quite smoothly at this juncture.
It's a disaster.
So if everything is there's no reason to believe it won't go at the pace it went this weekend, and you see the numbers in the thousands that are being extracted, then why can't you say on the August 31 deadline that we'll have this many people, we anticipate having this many people evacuated as against the number of people we need to evacuate, and then just make the sort of categorical statement of principle that August 31 is a political deadline. If there are Americans there, if there are Afghan allies there that we need to get out, then we will get them out. Rather than this sort of mealy-mouthed, middling rhetoric of, well, we're doing the best we can, we'll do the best we can, we're going to make an assessment at the time. August 31 is imaginary. We've set that. The priority is Americans and allies out, and whatever time that takes, based on contingencies that we're trying to game plan, that's the time that and the resources we'll devote to getting the job done.
Yeah, but Biden's not a leader. What you just said distributed great leadership and a plan. But with them, it's right. It's sing-songy. It's mealy-mouthed. It's, well, maybe like they're wringing their hands. Well, we're going to try instead of saying our number one priority is to get American citizens out of Afghanistan that are in danger. But he can't say it, and I don't know why.
Well, maybe
because he's not the man the Democrats thought he was.
Well, I think he's exactly who they thought he was. This is not like this guy is not a known quantity. Oh, this Joe Biden, he's been this way for 50 years. So the last question he took was on the polling, mainly, that suggests that the American people don't believe he's up for the job.
75% of Americans aren't happy with the what's going on in Afghanistan.
And his response to this is maybe confirmation of why a majority of Americans don't think he's up for the job.
Americans wanted to withdraw from Afghanistan, but they disapprove of the way you've handled it. Poll also found that based in part on what's transpired in the last week, a majority of Americans, and forgive me, I'm just the messenger, no longer consider you to be competent, focused, or effective in the job.
I haven't seen that poll.
It's out there from CBS this morning. What would you say to those Americans who no longer believe that you're up to the job?
I had a basic decision to make. I either withdraw America from a 20-year war that, depending on whose analysis you accept, cost us $150 million a day for 20 years or $300 million a day for 20 years. Who, and I, you know, I carry this card to me every day, and who, in fact, where we lost 2,448 Americans dead and 20,722 wounded. Either increase the number of forces we keep there and keep that going, or I end the war. And I decided to end the war.
Yeah, this is what he and his apologists have been doing all week against the backdrop of this catastrophic effort to extract Americans and Afghan allies. They're conflating the issues, right? I don't want to talk about our planning and response and execution of whatever planning was done, to the extent there was anything that's obvious. I want to talk about the decision to withdraw from Iraq. He's conflating two issues. Unfortunately for him, most people are not. They're saying, no, I understand we want to get our troops out of Iraq, and I agree with that. My problem is that you guys were caught flat-footed with the Taliban, despite intelligence assessments saying Kabul could fall shortly after a pullout on August 31st, despite what you were seeing on the ground with the Taliban making their way through that country, and not anticipating that once you told Afghan security forces that you were pulling air support and intel, that they could fold even faster, and then what you were going to do to remove Americans and Afghan allies, and now the execution of it. Now, and not to mention the last week of sort of seeming to be still flat-footed and not speaking with moral clarity on what America is going to do in defense of American citizens, in support of American citizens first and foremost. That's the issue. It's not the withdrawal. It's how you've handled the withdrawal, if you will. And Americans are making the distinction. Joe Biden is hoping they don't.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Tony and Roselle.
You made my point for me. You played the question that was stuck in my mind. I was out in the garage. My wife called me in to watch the announcement, and he meanderingly addressed the what and the why. He kept going off on tangents. He never touched the how. And that is, you know, people that I know that are left-wing and right-wing are all saying this is a complete disaster. This is a complete screw-up. No one disagrees, like you said, that we had to leave and the reasons we had to leave. And all the other things, when he whips up his little card, he meanders off topic, he gets tangential. But I think people are a little ticked off. I mean, now we got a situation where everybody's caught in a city and it's you know, they're in an untenable position. What happens when our troops are the last guys to leave on 10 transports and they start shooting transports out of the sky? Do you think you can trust these people?
Right.
This is a little miniature Vietnam. It's unbelievable.
Well, thanks for the call, Tony. Actually, you know, all the Saigon comparisons, it's worse than Saigon. Gerald Ford got everybody out.
Oh, good point.
Our friend John Gabriel at Ricochet made the point, you know, this guy wants to be FDR. He's not even Gerald Ford. Pete and Racine.
Good morning. Hey, question for you or Amy. When you're taking these people out, where are they transporting them to? Where are they dropping them off? I was just kind of wondering if what country or whatever is taking them in.
Thanks. Different Air Force bases, American bases. And then, you know, American Airlines, United, they're helping transfer them from those bases back to the States.
Yeah, there's so-called processing centers at these bases that have been set up or, you know, sort of around the region. And that's where the commercial airliners, right, like you said, that have, this was the report of the weekend, tasking commercial airlines voluntarily, and he spoke to that yesterday. And it's a couple, three planes from each of the major carriers' fleets, and they're transporting from processing centers to America or to their country of origin or their country of destination. But it's not, you know, commercial airliners in...
No, in combat zones.
Exactly. Yeah. So just to be clear on that, which is important to make that clear.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy are talking about President Biden's speech on Afghanistan yesterday afternoon and what the administration is doing to get Americans, first and foremost, and Afghan allies out of Afghanistan to extract them now that Kabul has fallen to the Taliban, the country has fallen to the Taliban.
And we discussed that. I mean, there is no real leadership there yesterday saying this is what we're going to do and assertiveness. Instead, it was, you know, things could get worse, guys.
There is no way to evacuate this many people without pain and loss of heartbreaking images you see on television. It's just a fact. My heart aches for those people you see. We are proving that we can move those thousands of people a day out of Kabul.
But
we're bringing our citizens, NATO allies, Afghanis who helped us in the war effort. But we have a long way to go. And a lot could still go wrong.
A lot could still go wrong.
Well, of course a lot could still go wrong.
Yeah, because you're in charge.
A lot could continue to go wrong is the point. It's like as things have gone so swimmingly up until this point, but there's still the possibility of pitfalls. Of course there is. And that's the real question is, you know, what does going wrong look like to you? And
exactly.
What is the planning being done to avert what could go wrong? That's what I would like to know. But again, he only took three questions. He's taken three questions from the press. I mean, other than the scripted, you know, you say this, I say this interview in quotation marks he did with Stephanopoulos earlier in the week. But in terms of questions from the press corps, he's taken three questions in the last week. And, you know, I think one of the things, too, and we'll talk about this with our friend Jim Carafano from the Heritage Foundation, Lieutenant Colonel Carafano at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. Again, get his expert insights as somebody who's was at the Pentagon for two decades and in the military for three. But, why do you think we're at this place with this administration? I mean, is it just Joe Biden personally? And I know, yeah, there's a lot of people criticizing Joe Biden. Finally, now they don't want to be associated with this. And Kamala Harris is nowhere to be seen. I understand the political fallout and then the sniping that occurs. That's not exactly telling me that it's all on Joe Biden. Is there something about government and Democrat socialists in charge of government that leads to events like we've seen transpire over the last week?
I mean, you asked last week, you said, has the government done anything right ever? And I was still pondering that, trying to find something, any program or entitlement for anything that has gone well, that has worked well.
20 years in, we've been talking about withdrawal and moving in the direction of withdrawal for the last 18 months, at least, you know, in significant fashion, the last year under President Trump, now leading into President Biden. How is it, do you think, that we got to this situation? Because, again, I mean, there are lifers in the Pentagon and these agencies that you don't want to be associated with incompetence. That ostensibly some of these people are very good at their jobs, that they have a very solid understanding of the topography, geopolitical topography of places like Afghanistan. You have analysts that have spent, you know, their careers, places and regions of the world like Afghanistan and Central Asia. And so how could it go like this? How could this happen? Why do you think it's happening like this under this administration? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Tim in Woodstock, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call today. I think, to your point, Dan, what I see is that they appease evil. they won't stand up and fight against evil. An interesting juxtaposition is take a look at a prayer that Anne Graham Lotz put out versus the prayer that Pope Francis offered in regard to this. Anne Graham Lotz talked about, if necessary, God, you know, give us the strength to crush our enemies. And Pope Francis was just totally the God of peace. You know, let's go, let's resolve this through discussion with our enemies. I think it comes down a lot to that our enemies don't fear us. They have no respect for us. That's all these people respect is strength. But
weakness is provocative. That's part of it, I think. I think that's part of the answer, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's more. And I just wanted to say that we're not extracting anyone. We're at the mercy of the Taliban. You know, Mr. Biden bragging about this extraordinary, the word he used, 11,000 people over the weekend. My son is involved in the evacuation effort. He's overseas right now. He should have really ended each sentence with, because the Taliban is allowing us. That's the only reason that people are getting out. His posture has been more like, oh, please cooperate with us so that I don't have to make it obvious to the world. I don't have to make it plain to the world that I won't use force to get
Where is your son?
I don't know that we want him to say any more about where his son is if he's military.
Okay.
Thanks for the call, Tim. Appreciate it. And obviously prayers for your son's safety and success with helping in this mission. So, it's interesting. The cover story from the administration is, the Taliban's in charge, so we're going to have to engage them. It's not about engaging them. It's about what Tim just mentioned. It's about, are you telling them, look, this is how it's going to be. If you hurt, much less kill, any American, then it completely changes the landscape and it changes your future. That's a different conversation than, please, mother, may I? While, as you heard from ABC, from CNN, Americans and others trying to make their way to get to the airport to be evacuated are being beaten. That the message then is, if I hear one more story like that, then this all changes. If you don't think we have the resolve to come back and turn your enclaves into parking lots, we do. And that sort of was Trump's message at his rally in Alabama over the weekend. This is what he had to say about what has transpired. And effectively, he's suggesting what he would have done were he still president.
It did not have to happen that way. This is not a withdrawal. This was a total surrender. This surrender for no reason. They weren't asking. We had them. I dealt with Abdul. He was the leader. I said, Abdul, anything happens, we are going to rain terror upon you. It will be a terrible thing. Don't touch our American citizens. Don't ever come to our country. Don't ever come to our country. And you're going to continue fighting your civil war. I can't do that. They've been fighting it for hundreds of years. That's what they do, is they fight.
So that's a little bit different posture with respect to the Taliban than it seems like the posture the Biden administration was taking. I think that's fair to say. Something, and if you don't believe me, listen to this characterization. This will probably go largely ignored, but it's just such a remarkable statement on the Taliban. Again, this is Joe Biden off script, part of the last question he answered before he scurried out of the room. Do you trust the Taliban? And here's what he had to say.
Taliban has to make a fundamental decision. Is the Taliban going to attempt to be able to unite and provide for the well-being of the people of Afghanistan, which no one group has ever done since before dealing for hundreds of years? And if it does, it's going to need everything from additional help in terms of economic assistance, trade, and a whole range of things.
The Taliban is at a crossroads. What is it about the ideology that that guides the Taliban over the past, this iteration of Islamofascism that guides people like the Taliban, Islamofascists, and has over the last eight centuries, that is confusing to you? oh, did you buy the press release? I mean, since you play press release politics, you know you're lying, though. The difference is what you think they're not when they, we want to be an inclusive nation. We want to be part of the community of nations. Phrases that we like to throw around and the Taliban and other enemies of America pick up on. Oh, this is, these are the flowery words that they like to hear. So let's throw those flowery words at them while we shoot any woman, behead any woman not wearing a burqa. There's really of two minds, the Taliban. It's difficult to know which direction they want to go. So, no, I don't trust them. We're going to have to see. We're going to have to see. Which way do you think they're going to go? What do you mean, which way? There's only one way. There's the same way. 8 centuries, it's been one way. I mean, that's the ideology that gives definition to terrorist organizations like the Taliban. What the hell is he talking about? But that's sort of the soft-headedness and the middling rhetoric that we're talking about when we talk about America being a soft nation, or at least Democrat socialists making America into a soft nation. And this is what gives rise to the mockery, like the Taliban imitating the flag raising at Iwo Jima that you probably saw over the weekend. But they're really trying to earn the respect of America and the community of nations. They want to be included and obviously inclusive, I'm sure. Have you seen the clips of where a reporter asked the Taliban about women office holders and these fighters just laugh uncontrollably? It's a punchline. And they got
and
a lot
was
of them.
Serious, yeah.
Yeah.
They're really making waves with women's studies,
too. Why don't you ask them about Pride Month in Kabul? How that's going to go. I mean, it's so asinine. To the Taliban at a crossroads, that's what Joe Biden thinks. Jordan in Forest Park.
I found a Department of Defense report from middle of last year, which provided some details on the number of DOD contractors, civilian contractors that were in Afghanistan. It was about 25,000. About 40% of that were American citizens, so that put that at about 10,000, 40% NATO third-party contractors, and then the rest Afghan nationals. So I'd like to know how many of these contractors were in the country, let's say when Trump left office, but did Biden know about these? And these 35,000 or whatever that he said were evacuated here recently, where did he get that number from? To me, that would be about 1,500 flights that would have had to.
No, the 35,000 number dates back to July. He started piling up numbers, right?
Yeah, that number seems to match. Also, if you add up all the contractors, you add up the 2,500 U.S. troops and the 7,500 NATO troops. So I think, yeah, that's exactly right. But I want to know, though, what was the plan to remove the contractors before the military left? I haven't heard anything discussed about
that. Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, that's right. It's a good question.
Why did they shut down Bagram Air Force Base before they got people out?
Since John Kirby doesn't know how many Americans are in Afghanistan as of Thursday of last week, I'd like to know if anybody in the administration does yet. I mean, how?
Now, who's got a list? Right. No, it's a very valid point. Why couldn't a reporter ask that? How many are in need to be evacuated?
Right. You say we're doing these... We evacuated this many over 36 hours this weekend. That's what he said yesterday. We don't anticipate that changing in terms of the pace. Okay. And so we'll have to see where we're at in 10 days or 8 days, I guess, August 31st, and whether or not that we'll hold that deadline. Well, if you don't know how many people you're trying to evacuate, then how can you anticipate these sorts of decisions? Which way you're going to need to go? How do you know when everybody's out? How do you know you didn't leave anybody behind if you don't have a handle on the numbers in each of these categories, in addition to obviously the specific name, so you can check people off a list?
Because they don't care.
Anybody who doesn't get to the airport didn't want to leave? Is that where we're going with?
Yeah, they just want to stay. They like their new life.
Well,
yeah.
I don't know, but these questions need to be pressed. Alex in St. Charles.
Hey, I just want to make a couple comments. So I spent 12 months in Iraq and 9 in Afghanistan, and I was there, and I'm just shocked that the administration has allowed the U.S. military to come to this precarious situation. You know, we're one firefight away from that airport being closed. And you're putting, at the time when this started, 500 Americans' lives at risk, and then now you say you have 3,500 or 6,000 Americans there. We could be completely defeated. And the Taliban, we're relying on the goodwill of the Taliban. You're negotiating in bad faith on both sides, Biden and Trump. It's shocking, and I still can't get over it.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Alex. Well, I mean, what could go wrong? What could go wrong with thousands of people trying to make their way to the airport in an area controlled by the Taliban, where we've got essentially limited boots on the ground and, frankly, limited air support? I mean, I think Alex is right. You don't even want to contemplate the scenario. But if they opened up on civilians, which is not beyond their willingness, I mean, you could have, obviously nobody wants this to happen, but you could have a massacre. You could have an epic right. massacre there. It's that tenuous.
And who could sleep easy until they're out of there? Really? I mean, God, my God, can you imagine if you had a loved one? But well, there are fellow Americans.
Well, not
so
to,
I've been restless.
Not to mention you're going. You've got stories about the Taliban going door to door. They're right. working off a list, their enemies' list. Who cooperated with the Americans yeah, they while they were here?
They know who cooked for the Americans while they were here. That's how detailed their list is.
Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Thanks for taking my call, Dan and Amy, and welcome back from your day off, Amy.
Yes.
Question for you, Dan.
Heroic.
Speaking of, right, yes, wow. What a triumphant return, like MacArthur, Bob. Yeah.
Question for you, Dan, watching the media. I haven't seen too many or any Democrats speak out on their position with regards to what Biden is doing, except for maybe David Axelrod. Let me flash back.
David
Axelrod. Let me flash back 50 years ago, roughly, when I was in college, when the media and especially a few Democrats turned on LBJ, and finally LBJ saw the writing on the wall. And I can still remember March 31st, 68, when he decided not to run again. So I'm wondering when some of the Democrats might step forward and start questioning what Biden has been doing.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Bob. You know, this
honeymoon's over, by the way. Yes.
Axelrod, you know, give me a break, Axelrod. Red diaper baby, professional liar, David Axelrod. The quote that's been circulating to not just Bob Gates, former CIA, Joe Biden's been wrong about every foreign policy matter in the last 20 years. And also, Obama, never underestimate Joe Biden's ability to blank things up, screw things up, let's say. Yeah. You know, let's not pretend that it's not the same people. Talk about the pot calling the kettle black. Don't circulate that quote without making that point. Don't reference that quote without making that point. This is the third term of Team Obama. So, like, there's separation between Obama and Biden. There's not. Particularly on the competence matter. Frank in Arlington Heights.
Hey, good morning. You know, if, well, first of all, America could be at a crossroads, not the Taliban. And, you know, if Joe Biden is as senile as, you know, they make him seem, you know, this country's in real trouble. And a good example from history I've been thinking about over the weekend is the old kingdom in Egypt, Pepi II. He was a pharaoh who took over when he was age six. His older brother died. And he kept going until he was like, legend says until he was 100 years old, but probably in his 80s. And the pharaohs back then had to be warriors. That's what they had to be. They had to go down or up the Nile and go raid the Kush kingdom and various other different things to bring back turquoise and gold and various other different things. And, you know, the old kingdom fell apart and you had a period of chaos there. This is about 2200 to 2100 BC. And it ended the old kingdom, which was the really rich period of Egyptian history when they built the pyramids and they had a lot of wealth. And then it fell apart and had 100 years of chaos. So, I mean, that is a really, I don't know, I was just thinking that's a really good example of where Joe Biden might be taking us. He's an old, senile man who can't handle this stuff. He can't string sentences together, almost kind of like Pepi was unable to lead Egypt in the old kingdom. The whole thing fell apart. He had infighting for 100 years.
Interesting. Thanks for the covering. Yeah, I mean, Taliban not at a crossroads. We know where they're going. More like America at a crossroads. Do we know where we're going?
You've made the switch.
and it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Where Chicago goes, Cook County is sure to follow. And so the Cook County Department of Health, all of those COVIDians, on Friday announced that, you know, same indoor mask mandate that Chicago instituted starting Friday will start this week in Cook County.
Yeah. 312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Yeah, if you go to the gym, any public indoor place, any grocery store, restaurant, retail shop.
I think we're familiar with how this works. We've been through it before.
Right. This is a perpetual nightmare that we can't get out of. But who's going to listen this time?
Right. Remember what we were doing up until, I don't know, when did it stop? The beginning of this year?
3 months ago we were unmasked.
Yeah.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
So remember what we were forced to do for, I don't know, a year? Well, you're forced to do it again. Oh, and there's some other things coming down the pike, too, with respect to vaccines, which we'll get to. Vivek Murthy, he's the Surgeon General. You remember him, Dr. Vivek Murthy's Ministry of Truth that he unfurled several weeks back with respect to big tech. Yeah, so he's suggesting once the vaccine gets formal FDA approval, that will lead to more mandates. Well, really? Sure. As if... as if all of the goers to the house of COVID, the church of COVID, really, as if all of those parishioners aren't behaving like the vaccines have FDA approval, like FDA approval is just a formality and we should treat the emergency use authorization as FDA approval. I mean, there's no distinction being made the way that it's being imposed in colleges and businesses, in governmental agencies. So formal FDA approval means what? Means what? We just won't be able to say it's emergency use authorization only anymore. It's formal FDA approval, which everybody knows was coming and is acting like that, is acting accordingly.
Right. But I think by having full FDA approval, people who are skeptical might say, okay, well, now it's fully been approved, so now I'll take the vaccine. I think that's what the government thinks is going to happen. But what in reality... If you haven't gotten it by now, I don't think you want to take it. And they could throw money at you and offer you all kinds of crazy stuff.
It'll change nothing.
It doesn't
matter.
It's going to change nothing.
It'll change nothing because they destroy their credibility on the topic. You know, maybe conversations with friends and informing friends about this. But they've destroyed their credibility on the topic. So I haven't, I mean, the TV doctors who've said all these things that turned out to be wrong, who, I mean... The head of NIH 3 weeks ago had to walk back in mandatory masks indoors in your home, Francis Collins said. And then he had to, oh, I didn't mean that. I misspoke. No, you didn't misspeak.
You didn't misspeak.
But that's their attitude.
In your home.
That's their attitude. By the way, you know, masks or vaccines, tackle it all here. But by the way, school openings? Yeah, in case you thought CPS was going to open on time or maybe at all.
Well, they're supposed to open a week from today, Dan.
A group of luminaries who sit on the city council and occupy chairs in Springfield have penned a letter to Lori Lightfoot and president of Chicago Board of Education and interim CPS CEO, Torres, expressing their concerns about the fall reopening plans. It's just not safe enough.
Yeah, they want 6 feet social distance instead of 3 feet. And their biggest point of contention, which makes my head explode, is that they want those who are vaccinated to quarantine if somebody in their class or on their sports team is test positive.
Oh, they've got a whole list
but
of
it's more than
they've
that,
got a
right,
whole
Dan?
List of recommendations.
Yeah.
Keeping unvaccinated students apart more than the standard 3 feet, as you say. Okay. As you say. So more for
unvaccinated.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So what do they want, vaccinated and unvaccinated classrooms? Because there's talk of that.
Sure.
In Glenbrook South
Why
and Glenbrook
not?
North. Vaccinated, like the peanut allergy table at lunch. The vaccinated sit on this side. The unvaccinated sit on this side of the room.
Conducting home visits year-round to engage CPS families to improve attendance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hire more clinicians. Of course. Oh, you know
hire
what we
more
need?
People.
We got fewer students. We need more staff. More clinicians, special ed teachers, support personnel to help students transition back to in-person learning. Transition back to in-person learning. Just show up to class. That's your transition back. No, there's a whole process you have to go through. You know, you were out of school. Now you're going to be in school. That's
wait,
a real
what?
Culture shock.
How do I get there?
These people.
And don't see we didn't warn you when school started a week from today.
These people.
But I have a $200 bet with my boys, Peyton and Eli, because I said they're not going to start on time. And they believe that they are. I'm like, okay, well, you keep plugging along. How'd that work out for you last year? 12 days of in-person learning? Are you kidding me? The rest relegated to the basement?
Well, here's some interesting remarks by an epidemiologist. You know, maybe all this business of trying to get the kids back in school is much ado about nothing. That's what I'm understanding. Her name is Ellie Murray. She's a epidemiologist at Boston University. And she had this to say about all this get kids back to school stuff. Genuine question for people more concerned about schools being closed than COVID. Are you aware mandatory schooling is barely a century old in this country? Maybe your all grandparents had high school, but what about your great-grandparents? Yes, education is important, but it's a pandemic! Exclamation point. My point here, she goes on, my point here isn't that schools closing is good or that everything is going to be just fine. It's that we shouldn't be acting like no schools is a completely unprecedented, unknowable scenario. It was normal life for most of human history. School is super important. I'm fully supportive of schools and education. Oh, you're the one who's supportive of schools and education. But the idea that schools need to stay open even when we can't do appropriate pandemic mitigation because who knows what unending damage closures will do to kids, quote unquote, mystifying to me. It's a remarkable string of tweets. She's the epidemiologist assistant professor at Boston University. What do you think about that? School, look, your great-grandparents didn't go to school in classroom, so what's the big deal? What's the big deal? Right? This is so ridiculous, her statements, but I'm not going to describe why it is. You're going to have to describe it to me to make sure you understand the point. That even Tyler Cohen and Alex Tabarrok over at Marginal Revolution, who never go after people, not really, and who are pretty pro, I mean, they're sort of libertarian-leaning economists, but they're sort of pretty pro public health mitigation measures, you know, way at the tip of the spear in terms of promoting vaccine. And a lot of the stuff is good, but I'm just saying, you know, they don't go after people who are supporting mask mandates and vaccine mandates and so on and so forth. Well, they couldn't resist going after her. And they even characterized it as, look, we don't like to dunk on people, but this is so wildly wrong, they felt compelled to point it out. But is that wrong? You know, remember your great-grandparents? They didn't go in classroom. You know, maybe they had that little red one-classroom schoolhouse. But
what is she talking about?
Compulsory education is only 100 years or so old, 120 years old, 140 years old. So maybe it's not that big a deal, especially against the pandemic when proper mitigation measures, she doesn't mention what's proper, cannot be affected. Tom in Deer Park.
Oh, you guys might want to try Wisconsin. I know you know this, but you can go anywhere up here, any store, any restaurant, any church, and specifically Catholic church and classroom. And if someone's got a mask on, it's one of two things. They might think that you're an armed robber, or worse, they know that you're from Chicago. So it's what a different world it is. And
I know.
I appreciate the pushback you guys do on your show, because if we don't push back in our communities in Illinois, they're just going to keep getting away with it. And yes, I'm very unpopular in places, but I speak up on the masking. So,
all right, thanks, Tom. This is Dr. Ellie Murray. That's a good doctor. I think she's just a professor, so I don't know. So I'm not going to. I'm going to not give her the benefit of the doubt. Ellie Murray, this Boston University professor. She also tweeted out a picture of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and on it, the five parts of the pyramid, the first two, psychological needs and safety needs, basic needs. Psychological needs, food, water, warmth, rest, safety needs, security, safety. She imprinted not getting COVID is now on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, her version of it, for both physiological and safety needs. Basic needs, physiological needs, safety needs, not getting COVID is there on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's just so hysterical.
Even New York Magazine published an article about they don't know the masks work in schools because the CDC has only done observation studies that can be easily politicized. They have never done a randomized controlled trial.
Yeah. We talked about that. Right. We talked about last week.
But it needs to, it bears to be repeated. Are we going to do this for the rest of our lives? Because it's going to ebb and flow because it's a virus. And then when it goes down, then, Pritzker and Dr. White say, because the mask mandate worked. No, it went down because that's the natural life and cycle of the virus.
Yeah. Another study out, too. Waterloo, Ontario, University of Waterloo up there in Strange Brewland, finds maybe N95 masks provide some protection, but cloth masks don't, which is what most people wear. There's a very serious difference in the effectiveness of different masks when it comes to controlling aerosols. Yeah, no kidding. Studies continue to show aerosols exhaled by infected individuals can indeed infect others with COVID, even if someone is standing more than 6 feet away. Well, going to have to revise, going to have to, space out your idiot circles a little bit further. I mean, we know this. The studies just keep piling up. Go ahead. Keep studying it. I'm pro-science. I'm not I'm not a religious zealot like these parishioners at the Church of COVID. Go keep studying it. And it keeps coming back more or less the same and more or less unsupportive of these mask mandates and other mitigation measures.
But the enthusiasts, the mask enthusiasts are so excited about this day. Here's the owner of Hemingway's Bistro.
A lot of the people that were going out and, going maskless have now just, embraced wearing masks again. So
we have?
I really don't think it's going to have much of an effect on us.
Yeah, a lot of them have.
Yeah.
He's right, but for the wrong reason. I mean, he's correct in terms of what he's observing. That's true. What do we find? WGN poll, 70% of Chicagoans support the mask mandate. So he's right about that. It's just that 70% of the people are wrong. That is possible. That a majority could be wrong. I don't know if that's beyond the comprehension of some, but just because 50% plus one say something is true or morally correct doesn't make it so.
And some people only want to wear it in some places, not in other settings, not the gyms.
It's one thing to wear a mask in the grocery store, but it's another thing in a gym class or in the health club.
Yeah, who's that?
That's a Northbrook resident. Yeah, that's affected by this.
It's exciting.
Lives in Cook County. The WHO said from the beginning, you should never wear a mask if you're doing intense physical activity. Never. And did the CDC ever pick up on that or even care? No. Mask everything. Lock it down. That's what we're going
to
do.
I think we need to get a celebrity in on this discussion for some expertise. I mean, when you're confused and, the science could go either way, although it's not the case here, but just for the purposes of the setup.
Okay.
You want to enlist somebody from Hollywood who really knows these things. Melissa Joan Hart, she's a little bit past her sell-by date, but she used to be on some, Sabrina the Teenage Bitch or something.
It's the Teenage Witch.
Oh, right, yeah. Melissa Joan Hart on her kids getting COVID, even though she got vaccinated. She gives this whole dissertation. It's very interesting.
Hey, I never do videos, but I really felt like this was important and how I'm feeling and what's going on with me and my family. I got COVID. I am vaccinated and I got COVID and it's bad. It's weighing on my chest. It's hard to breathe.
Not bad enough that I can't do this video.
one of my kids, I think, has it so far. I'm praying that the other ones are okay.
Get them tested.
I'm mad. Really mad. Because we tried. And we took precautions and we cut our exposure by a lot. But we got a little lazy. And I think as a country, we got lazy. And I'm really mad that my kids didn't have to wear masks at school. Because I'm pretty sure that's where this came from. And nothing I can do about it now. My little one luckily wore a mask every day because he was used to it from last year. And he came home bragging every day, "Mom, I wore my mask." And I was so thankful. And now if he does get it, I can at least tell him he was a superhero to those in his classroom because he protected his teacher and his classmates from it.
You know, I was a COVID superhero over the weekend.
Oh, what'd you do, Dan?
I was a Rona buster.
What'd you do?
When I was, you know, dithering around my well-appointed condo on Sunday, I looked out the window, and I saw the Blue Angels. So I stopped to gaze for a moment.
Yeah.
And I noticed one of their formations, they were not socially distant.
Oh, my God. So what'd you do? Did you call 311 or 911?
I sent an email to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who's a big mask fan, to see if he might talk to the Navy about making sure the Blue Angels formations are COVID compliant.
Because they're only 18 inches apart instead of 3 to 6
feet. I'm just trying to do my part.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to save lives. Okay? Me and Melissa Joan Hart. Matt in South Bend.
Yeah, was checking in. I was going to say, where are the kids going to learn to know to move forward to get their education at school? So they put in, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes of COVID preparation once a week, twice a week. I don't know. I think they need to format a little bit more here and get progressive and think instead of getting stuck.
All right. Thanks, Matt. Frank and Huntley. Hey, Frank.
Frank.
Frank and Huntley.
Oh, we are so excited to have you.
Juan in Noble Square. We talked to Juan
last
week.
Hey, guys. This is Juan from Nini's Deli last week. I just wanted to thank you guys for shouting us out. We got so busy that Friday and Saturday, and I'm just so grateful for you all. Thank you for shouting us out.
Oh, our pleasure. That's great. It's great to hear. I haven't made my way over there, but I will. So, Juan, tell us. So, Nini's is over by UC, right, in Noble Square?
Yeah, we're right about 10 minutes away from United Center. My family's born in Cuba. Mm-hmm. So I've been conservative since a baby, and we sell delicious empanadas and sandwiches. Ooh. We don't push the mask mandate, none of that crazy stuff. We just want people to be free.
Very good. All right.
Oh, I find stuff.
There you go.
Again, y'all, we really appreciate you guys. So grateful.
Thank you, Juan. Appreciate it. And, yeah, you could use an empanada. You're wasting weight and nothing over there.
We stop, but I love an empanada.
Some meat on those bones.
Scotch Lady tweeted the best thing ever. I don't know if you saw this. So you think your obedience is what's going to end all this when it's really your obedience that is making it last.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Scott the cow guy.
A great man once said that the only way the hamster gets off its wheel is to stop running.
And that man was Dan Brown.
That man was me. Modern day Confucius. Frank and Huntley. One more chance. Frank.
Hello.
Hey.
Yep, go ahead. Frank, go ahead. You're on.
Hey, Dan. Question for you. As far as all of the COVID goes, we seem to have lost track of where this came from. Maybe I'm more vindictive than the rest of them, but it's been described to me that initially they tried stealing our past. We wipe out the old folks. They get COVID. It doesn't work. It doesn't scare everybody into submission, compliance, whatever adjective you want to apply to it. Now they're going after our future. So at what point do we become vindictive about this and go after who actually brought this to us?
All right. Thanks for the call, Frank. Yeah, it's important to not lose sight of, you know, determining, you know, for all intents and purposes where the virus originated.
I feel like that's been put on the back burner.
Well, no,
you know, I mean,
well, no, by this administration, no question. By the way, I got this from a friend who gets this newsletter for the grain markets. You know, he's a trader. Since the last 16 months, with a population of 1.4 billion, China hasn't reported a single COVID death since January and only four deaths over the last 16 months.
You buy that? You believe that?
No. Newsletter
writer. Delta didn't touch them?
This is a miracle achievement and fabrication. One death since January, four deaths in the last 16 months in China, a country of 1.4 billion people. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, one way to do this is like, you know, one of us is lying. It's either the United States or China. And if it's not us, then that should inform our understanding of everything they have to say about COVID and, frankly, everything else, shouldn't it?
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. You know what? I'm really tired of these stories. They're really ghoulish, actually, and just ghastly. Stories like this radio talk show host out of Nashville, Phil Valentine. He died of COVID infection.
And he was a COVID vaccine denier.
He wasn't a denier. He had fun with it. He did like parody songs. He didn't take the vaccine.
Right. That's how they're.
Yeah, but that's not denying it. Him. Right. I recognize the vaccine. I recognize the results of the vaccine, both the good and the adverse outcomes. I recognize it. I'm making a choice. I'm not denying that it has any, that it doesn't have efficacy. I'm not denying that COVID is an illness. I'm not denying anything. But the way they report the deaths is almost celebratory.
Oh, yeah. They're excited that he passed away. It's the lead on all mainstream media and on the websites.
They're characterized as conspiracy theorists, and some may be, but everyone is. Even when the stated position is something to the opposite. And then, of course, you have the recrimination. His brother saying he wished he would have blah, 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 blah. It's really just, again, emblematic of a society where we're looking to jackpot our neighbor. That's what all of this neo-Jacobinism is. We have an ideology. We have positions. No deviation is allowed. And if you deviate, we will inflict punishment or we will celebrate any punishment inflicted upon you. That's an interesting way to organize a free society.
They're dancing on his grave. I mean, you don't think Jesse Sharkey, the CTU, is foaming at the mouth, just waiting for a teacher to get COVID? Maybe they don't want him or her to die, but just to get seriously ill enough to say, see, we told you.
And so the way the press reports this rather tepid incident at Trump's rally in Alabama over the weekend. Trump booed at rally for suggesting people get vaccinated. Listen to how
what
it actually
really
went down.
Colbert, everything that we did, and then we developed a vaccine, three vaccines in 3 months, in 9 months. And actually, I'll tell you, it was 3 days less, 3 days less than 9 months. And it's great. And you know what? I believe totally in your freedoms. I do. You got to do what you have to do. But I recommend take the vaccines. I did it. It's good. Take the vaccines. But you got, no, that's okay. That's all right. You got your freedoms, but I happen to take the vaccine. If it doesn't work, you'll be the first to know, okay? I'll call up Alabama and say, hey, you know what? But it is working.
There were reportedly some 30,000 people there.
That was not.
And you heard a smattering of boos, you know, take the vaccine. Okay, some people don't want to take the vaccine for whatever reason. And a lot of people have the president's position exactly, which is it's working. It is working, particularly. And, you know, then you have to layer it, talking about different age cohorts and making the cost benefit analysis. So take it. But you also retain your freedoms if you don't want to take it. And he's not suggesting any mandates. Trump booed it. Come on.
That was hardly a boo. I mean.
There are differences of opinions, and again, there's been research in this now. It's not because people believe, quote unquote, misinformation. It's because they're making a choice based on actually accurate information. They're just saying, I don't want to do it for personal reasons or for cost benefit reasons, for whatever reason. I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree with the data and science. I don't want to do it. That's different. That's not being an anti-vaxxer. It's not being a conspiracy theorist. It's reminding people, as President Trump did, that you still have or should have your freedoms. For more on the topic, please be joined by Dr. Reed Spaulding. He's a contributor to the American Spectator and practicing pathologist. All opinions expressed are his and not those of his employer, so he can keep his job. Dr. Spaulding, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate it.
So what about the booster? Talking about vaccines. So this is an interesting piece. I was just referencing him before the break. Tyler Cohen, who's an economist over at George Mason University, his Bloomberg column, he writes, Biden's not pushing a third booster shot for people who've already been vaccinated. Might be a good idea, but it too creates additional uncertainty for travel and migration and for social interaction more broadly. If three doses are so important, should people be allowed to travel or, for that matter, interact indoors with only two doses? The bar is raised yet again.
Right. That's kind of the problem when you have policies that are based on how many doses and who's got what dose here, what dose there. I think if you're asking just in general, what do I think about the boosters? I mean, I think it's a good idea. What is going to happen, I don't think, but what would be the best thing is if they could modify those shots to take into account some of the variants, specifically the Delta variant, right? And maybe in the future, there will be boosters of that nature that come out. But, no, I mean, I think in general it's a good idea for people to get as many, you know, of these vaccines as doses as they're allowed to.
But here's the problem, and what Tyler Cohen points out, Tony Fauci is essentially confirms. Fauci told MSNBC last week, of course, MSNBC or CNN, if you get a prime and then a booster, you get the maximum effect of a late boost if you give the immune system a chance, saying, don't get the third shot too early after you've gotten the vaccine. So if you're going to impose mandates, then it seems to me what you have Fauci and the other TV doctors setting up is we'll impose this vaccine. You know, we're all for more mandates and the FDA and the Surgeon General Vivek Murthy said this much as soon as it gets formal FDA approval. So we're all for the mandates, businesses, government agencies, schools, vaccine mandates. And then the booster, so that'll be a way to lord over you for a period of time until, you know, you get people to the booster level. And then we'll say, OK, at this point, it's been long enough in terms of everybody getting vaccinated or should get vaccinated. Now we're going to impose the booster mandate and we'll extend this a little bit further. And then despite what Rochelle Walensky says, we don't anticipate this being an annual shot.
Oh,
I don't believe her. Let's say it is. And so then it's in perpetuity.
Right. No, I mean, hey, that's a different question. You know,
it is a different question, and
I don't think that, you know, I'm not a fan of mandates really at all. And you're right. If it sets up some type of gray zone to where it's like, well, you're between shots number two and three, so you can't do X, Y, or Z in public compared to someone who's, you know, graduated to level three shot. That's obviously problematic for society. Who's going to keep track of that? How are they going to really even enforce something like that? You know, hopefully this all just ends.
Well, yeah, it's not. It's a perpetual night. So
you can hope.
If you're 70 plus, who needs a booster? Obviously, if you're a cancer survivor, they said organ plant. If you had an organ transplant, if you have HIV, if you're 70 plus, correct?
Yeah, people that are at, you know, the most risk of having a bad outcome from getting COVID, whether it's Alpha or Delta or whatever variant it may be, right? I mean, those are the people that you said, the people that are of advanced age, that are immunocompromised for different reasons, people that have had cancer, you know, those types of folks, those are the ones who should be the first ones to get a booster as those become available. And, it's, you know, they're kind of starting to now. And I think over the next couple of months, we're going to see more and more people starting to get those, especially in healthcare settings and, you know, those immunocompromised people that I just listed off.
We were talking about masks, of course, and the renewed mandates, particularly in schools. And
starting here today in the Cook County.
And the defiance in every direction, the defiance against bans on mask mandates, the defiance against mask mandates. This piece in New York Magazine, this is noteworthy only because it's in New York Magazine. We'll see if the social media minders treat them the way they've treated everybody else who's had this position for the last 18 months. The science of masking kids at schools remains uncertain. And in this piece by David Zwig, he writes, And by the way, it's not uncertain with respect to cloth masks. It's not uncertain. It's that they're it's performative. That's what the studies say. Those with clinical trials. But anyway, he writes, many of America's peer nations around the world, including Britain, Ireland, all of Scandinavia, France, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Italy, have exempted kids with varying age cutoffs from wearing masks in classrooms. Conspicuously, there's no evidence of more outbreaks in schools in those countries relative to schools in the U.S., where the solid majority of kids wore masks for an entire academic year and will continue to do so for the foreseeable future. So how is this policy in this country and the pronouncements from those same TV doctors I mentioned and all these lockdown politicians, how does that square with the science?
Well, you know, first of all, you must have been reading my mind because I literally just read that article like 10 minutes ago.
There you go.
And yeah, and it's an excellent article. I mean, I hope that people circulate that around and really, you know, give it the press that it deserves. I don't think that, you know, the mask mandate for the elementary school kids in particular, that they don't square with the science. And like he pointed out in that article, I mean, they're not really doing this in other parts of the world because they kind of decided in conjunction with the WHO that, you know, masking young children hasn't shown any reproducible benefit to those kids when you're talking about containing the spread, right?
And by the way, just as a quick aside, we're talking about places like France, where right now they're in week six of protests over vaccine passports. So it's not like these are, you know, freewheeling countries. We're not just talking about Sweden here. We're talking about countries that are, you know, pro lockdown vaccine passports and the rest of it.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not talking about the libertarian development. Yeah. No, and it's I think it's very interesting. I think it's, I'm not really sure what motivates it, to be honest, because, you know, this study wasn't just looking at children, obviously, but the only, you know, study that was reproducible, that was a controlled trial to look at the effects of masking asymptomatic people in terms of COVID, the only one of those was the Dan Mask study, which was back at the end of last year. And I know you guys have talked about this before, but, you know, for the viewers, I mean, it didn't show that there was definitely a benefit to doing that, that there wasn't a significant reduction in disease spread. Now, you know, the CDC they didn't totally pan the study, but they definitely were kind of lukewarm with it. And the criticism was that, well, there weren't enough people involved. It was a study of about 5,000 total, I believe. The criticism was also that, well, there wasn't a lot of disease in Denmark at that time. And so, you know, if you did the study later when the disease prevalence was higher, then you might find a different result. I mean, you know, both of those things are true. But on the other hand, they'll hold up other studies and act like they're these arbiters of truth. And one that I've seen multiple times is this study about this hairdresser in Missouri who was positive for COVID, and she put the mask on, and then none of her 100-something clients got COVID, and they hold that up as proof that masking people works. And it's like, you know, there's no, I mean, the problems with holding that up are just so obvious that it's almost laughable. I mean, there's 1,000 different things that could have contributed to that outcome. There, you know, there's no control at all. It's just a small observational study, right? And here you have a study that has a control that really spent time and weeks and really looked at this, and they didn't find a result, and they kind of just kind of poo-pooed it, right?
Because it wasn't what they wanted. It was a 2% positivity rate for masked and unmasked. It was exactly the same. That's
right.
What they discovered.
And actually, yeah, and back to the article in New York Magazine we were just talking about, you know, the interesting thing about that is the summary of that article, the article starts out talking about this, the summary of that article said that, you know, when you were putting masks on teachers that were unvaccinated, that did show some statistical benefit. But there were other measures that were in the schools that didn't show any statistical benefit. Things like those silly partitions, you know, between, I mean, who really thought that was doing anything? But it didn't show a benefit. You know, that the air filters didn't really show a benefit. And, you know, most importantly, ding, 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 that masking the kids didn't show a statistical benefit, but they intentionally left that out of the summary when they released it to the press. And so that never really got picked up anywhere.
Yeah,
but, you
they're
know,
concerned
that
about
negative
their careers,
finding,
right?
Yeah, but that negative finding is really important because, you know, policy wonks, you know, people that are making these policies at school boards, I mean, they're kind of, they don't know, they're just going on what they're told, right? And they're like, well, the CDC says we need to do it, so we'll do it. And, you know, I just didn't like that. I read that article and I thought, wow, it was a little bit misleading. They shouldn't have done that, you know. That was an important finding. But
he is Dr. Reed Spalding, contributor to the American Spectator, practicing pathologist. All opinions expressed have been his own and not those of his employer. Dr. Spalding, thanks for joining us as always.
Thanks so much. You guys have a good day.
Thanks. You too. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. On Friday, the Biden message was anybody who wants to get to the airport in Kabul to get out of Afghanistan can do so. On Friday night, here is the reporting by Clarissa Ward, CNN. Those nice people chanting death to America, also not so nice to those trying to get to the airport, despite what the president said.
The president said on Americans two things. First, that there was no indication that Americans were having any difficulty getting there to the airport. Have you seen any difficulty for Americans there with American passports trying to get through into the airport? And do we know if any of the 10,000 who are waiting there are Americans?
Well, we had difficulty getting into the airport. Yeah. Working out how to get into the airport is like a Rubik's Cube. You have to sit and go through a whole different slew of factors and contingency plans and trying to get help from different places. And, you know, I can't get into the details of how we did get in, but it's very difficult.
No problem getting to the airport. Clarissa Ward, CNN, saying it's very difficult. Over at ABC, same night, Friday night, David Muir talking to his correspondent on the ground there, Ian Pennell. Here was the reaction that correspondent provided to what the Biden administration was saying.
The president said he has no intelligence that Americans have been unable to get there. The question, obviously, does that square with reporting on the ground?
I mean, just totally not. I mean, the reaction was pretty much one of I mean, it was breathtaking. No indication Americans can't get to the airport. I mean, last night on World News, we had American citizens who had exactly that experience. They tried to get to the airport. They had waived their American passports. The president talked about all they had to do was present their passports and they'd be allowed through. They were beaten by the Taliban with the rubber fan belt from a vehicle. Multiple examples of Americans and Afghans, SIV applicants, who have now tried repeatedly. There's one woman we're tracking. She's back at the airport tonight. This is her third night in the row. The gates haven't opened. The Taliban haven't let her through. It just seems the reality and the rhetoric are miles apart.
Yeah, so the Biden speech on Sunday, yesterday, seemed to indicate that the 36 hours subsequent to Friday, much progress has been made. And he had this to say about the last week, that what happened this past week would have happened no matter when it started.
The evacuation of thousands of people from Kabul is going to be hard and painful no matter when it started, when we began. Would have been true if we had started a month ago or a month from now. There is no way to evacuate this many people without pain and loss of heartbreaking images you see on television. It's just a fact. But we have a long way to go, and a lot could still go wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing that stuck with me. A lot could still go wrong. Well, fix that. You're in charge. You're the president. Do something. But there's no sense of urgency. It's the strangest thing I've ever seen.
It sort of implies that nothing has gone wrong to this point, but still could.
Mm-hmm. So brace yourselves, people.
For more on all that has transpired in the last week and just even in the last 72 hours, including with Biden's speech yesterday, pleased to be joined for our weekly confab by Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for International Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and author of the recently released book, Brutal War, Jungle Fighting Papua New Guinea, 1942. Jim, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
You know, this is really surreal for me. I mean, I cover these things all the time, but this one has gotten incredibly personal. And people have been scrambling all week. trying to connect people to get people out of the country. And me, like many people, have just been in the middle of this, just trying to put people together that can help each other. I mean, and it's, in the one hand, it is unbelievably inspiring how many people are jumping in and just doing it. I mean, it's like Dunkirk, where people just went down and got their boat and crossed the channel. But the problem is we have Dunkirk, but we don't have a Churchill.
Well, what exactly are people doing to step in to help?
A lot of people are, all the pieces in the chain. Getting people to the airport. So finding people who can hook them up with a security, people that you could trust, who can walk them to the gate. That's one. Getting the paperwork to the State Department, getting it approved so you can get inside the gate. That's two. Getting a flight out. So there's a lot of private aircraft. There's a lot of private aircraft that are flying in there, in addition to, you know, the planes from Britain and Germany and U.S. And getting people on a plane, you got $250,000, you can get a plane, get to Afghanistan, land at the Kabul airport, fill it up with whoever you want, flee the country. The next problem is getting visas to get into a place, whether it's the U.S. And many countries have really been very opening and stepping forward and offering visas. Many of our European friends, I mean, countries, we didn't even ask them to. They just, because the U.S. is just missing in action on this. Then when you get the person to the country, like, for example, if they get here to the U.S., they're a typical refugee. Somebody's got to feed them, house them, help them get a job, help them get resettled. And so people are working that entire chain. And the U.S. government is completely absent. There are federal agencies that were told, stand down. Do not do, if anybody says it is not your job to help people, do nothing. Tell them to call the State Department. So there is no interagency. There is no whole of government interagency effort to get everybody out. And the U.S. is not coordinated with foreign governments. I know countries where people fled there, and there are countries where they've got to get them out because they're next to Afghanistan. And the Taliban are saying, we want these people back. And they don't want to send the people back because they know they get killed. But they don't want to keep them either because they don't want to annoy the Taliban, who's now their neighbor. So they want to get them out of the country as quickly as possible so they're safe. And they call the U.S. government, and the U.S. government has no response for them.
Biden said yesterday, I mean, you're surreal, I guess, is about as good a description as you can have to what you just described. But he said yesterday, you know, that over 36 hours, thousands of people have been evacuated, including many Americans. They're being flown to processing centers around the world, ultimately to make their way back to their home destination. And he expects that pace to continue. And so whether or not to extend the withdrawal deadline beyond August 31st is a wait and see, because we may have everybody out by then. So that's what he described.
Well, here's the problem with that. Well, one is, well, we don't know how many people that is.
Well, that's one of the questions, right?
Right. So it could be upwards of 100,000. And if you're flying a couple of thousand people out a day and you do the math, it doesn't get you August 31st. That's problem number one. Problem number two is all of this is happening at the good graces of the Taliban.
Mm-hmm.
And the Taliban can shut this down, slow it down. I mean, I saw intel that the Taliban are agitating people to do anti-American riots. And one of the things they may do is they may spark a riot that would force the shutdown of the airport. And then, of course, they blame the United States because the people are fighting against the United States. So the Taliban control this. And one of the reasons why this government has been so reluctant to criticize or say things about the Taliban is they know that the Taliban have them. And from the Taliban's perspective, the longer this drags out, the more everybody is consumed with the evacuation of refugees and their personnel, the more time and resources the Taliban have to consolidate their control over the country, which is important because there's already a counterinsurgency flaring against the Taliban.
But before we even get to what could happen, what about is what he's describing at the airport, even as of yesterday, obviously last week, as of Friday, it was not accurate. Is his description of what's happening at the airport as of yesterday accurate? Because there's stories out about the evac planes dropping flares and doing nosedive landings because they're afraid of being shot out of the sky.
Well, that's true. But look, I mean, the State Department's own announcements run counter to what Biden said. I mean, they're constantly putting out announcements. It's not safe to go to the airport. Don't come here now. So even the government official statements contradict that. But anybody who's talking to anybody on the ground knows it's very difficult to get to the airport. Some people bribe Taliban. Some people risk beatings. Some people risk having their passports and visas taken away from them. So it is very, very difficult to get to the airport.
But why are we evacuating Afghan civilians before American citizens? Is it just because they happen to be at the airport and they have a visa?
Yeah,
or?
I think that's right. Okay. I mean, the reality is they're evacuating who shows up. And you couldn't, like, to have a plane sit there empty,
right,
waiting to fill it up with Americans. Well, you literally had tens of thousands of Afghan, you know, interpreters and their families and stuff. That doesn't make any sense. So I don't put a lot of stock in the criticism, like, why are we taking other people out before American citizens? When American citizens show up at the airport, they fly them out. Matter of fact, the tragedy is we've had planes fly out half empty with empty seats because it's so chaotic at the airport and they can't even get people on planes. So I don't think that's a realistic criticism.
And why can't military, why does it have to be make your way to the airport? Why can't military, as Austin and Millie said, we don't have the capacity to extract large numbers of people. Why not?
Well, I mean, of course they can, because the Brits and others have done that, send military people out, and nobody's going to screw with these guys. I think the problem for this is, again, this is all at the good graces of the Taliban. So if the U.S. sends combat forces outside the war and they get in a firefight, maybe that becomes an excuse for a riot that shuts down the airport. Maybe it angers the Taliban and they shut down the airport. Maybe they have a Black Hawk moment, and there's a military catastrophe. A lot of people get killed. And this administration is so dear in that. Look, they're so afraid. Remember, this all started out of fear. Biden convinced himself that there was going to be a Saigon moment here, and that if he quickly ran away in the middle of the night, that two things would happen. One is the Taliban would let him. They would be grateful. He just gifted them the country. Why wouldn't he let him just take everybody out and not humiliate him? And the other thing was Americans wouldn't care. Well, of course the Taliban are going to humiliate the United States going out the door and take advantage of this. They're just idiots to assume that. And then they had no plan to deal with. They had no plan to deal with this. And that was the plan. The plan was to have no plan. The plan was, is because we didn't plan anything, the Taliban were just going to let us walk out the door. And there was no contingency to do otherwise. And now we know that they can only leave as long as the Taliban leaves the Kabul airport open. So literally they are hostage to whatever the Taliban want to do, and they're just terrified to annoy them.
But here's the thing that baffles me. So they have no plan. They're caught off guard. Now they're paralyzed by fear. They don't want to make another mistake that engenders a catastrophe of human lives being lost, like you were just describing. But I mean, the Pentagon, you have all these institutional people at places like the Pentagon and Department of Defense. I mean, isn't there something that from the previous administration they could dust off and say, you know, we were game planning these contingencies and we can do these things. All you have to do is give us the green light.
Yeah, well, we need authority to execute from the president, and that's just not happening. Look, remember, I mean, I'm not trying to be partisan here. Nobody likes this. Nobody wants the president to fail. Nobody wants America to fail. I'm not saying this out of, like, oh, joyful, gleefully. Oh, look, I warned you that Biden wasn't competent. But the reality is even now we are a week into this crisis and literally 8 days away from this deadline, which would be another excuse for the Taliban to shut everything down. Mm-hmm. And the president is sometimes in the Oval Office and literally has to run home to Delaware every time after he speaks in the Oval Office to recuperate. They send the vice president off out of the country, and she, and when she was here during the height of the crisis, and I know this because I know the person that lives near her, and they watch the when the caravan comes to take her to work, she was working banker's hours during the height of the crisis, coming in about 9:45 a.m. She didn't work weekends. So the president and vice president of the United States are literally bystanders in this. There is no massive interagency effort. We know that for a fact. So they have not, because solving the crisis is not their imperative right now. Their imperative right now, just like Obama at Benghazi, was avoiding blame for the crisis. And there's an irony here, which is ironically, the more you move in to deal with the crisis and take ownership of it, the more it's your crisis, and they don't want that.
Right.
So they downplay it, and they try to ignore it,
and
they just hope Americans will forget.
And conflate the issue like Biden did yesterday, say, look, my choice was withdrawal or add more troops, and I chose withdrawal, and withdrawal was always going to be messy. He wants to make this a referendum on withdrawal that has popular support rather than a referendum on how you withdraw, which does not.
Yeah, but the problem is okay, so we talked about the strategic failure. The second problem is the political failure. This line is not working. This line is that Americans won't hold me accountable for this, and Americans will understand and forgive me. There is zero, less than zero evidence for that. I mean, as upset as Americans were about the border looks like a success story compared to this. Hmm. They were completely politically tone deaf, and they're just getting hammered to death. So he's a strategic failure. He's a political failure, and he's also a failure as a leader. I mean, he's literally not leading to solve the crisis. He's doing exactly what Obama did in Benghazi. But the problem, the difference is Obama just had to fake it for a couple of weeks to get through the election. You know, Biden is going to carry this for 3 years, and this problem's not going away. The refugee evac is just the first wave of the crisis. The second wave is the transnational terrorism problem. The third way is that he's just gifted the country to China. There's no way this doesn't plague him for 4 years.
Just in terms of the impact, I hate to look past the immediate crisis because it certainly is one, as you were describing in painstaking detail. But, you know, the U.S. is getting hammered, Biden getting hammered by the Brits in particular. Numerous members of the House of Lords said, among other things, Biden may have condemned the world to Chinese domination in the future.
Well, it's not just the Brits. I mean, all the Europeans are, except for the five-star in Italy, which is actually pro-Taliban. They've forgotten this wonderful trip, like 2 months ago. They're worried about, first of all, they're terrified about another wave of refugees. And they're worried about the resurgence of transnational terrorism. And they're worried about incredibly lack of leadership and a demonstration of weakness, and knowing that the Russians and the Chinese and the North Koreans and the Iranians are going to take advantage of this. They're literally disgusted with Biden. But, I got to tell you this. This is Washington's dirty little secret. Everybody knew Biden was completely incompetent.
Yeah.
The Europeans knew it. Democrats, everybody knew it. Of course, the left was desperate for anybody but Trump. And everybody else just put on a brave face and smiled and said nice things about Biden because they wanted to suck up to the new president. But I don't really think anybody's really surprised at what's going on.
Well, hopefully whatever he considers things could get worse doesn't come to be, because if he doesn't think things are bad now, God only knows what he thinks worse looks like. Lieutenant Colonel Jim Carafano, Heritage Foundation, thanks as always.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, the COVID colonists in Illinois. Some are getting restless. 32 public school districts are on probation with the State Board of Education for defying Jelly Belly's school mask mandate.
That's up from 21. That's good. Out of, 800 school districts?
Uh-huh.
So we got 32 now.
Three private schools, Bethany Lutheran in Naperville, Bethany Lutheran in Naperville, St. Luke in Itasca, and Trinity Christian in Shorewood. Going to be sanctioned by the state, too, because of mass mandate defiance. The other is a Lutheran school in Mattoon. The reporting is on that. So you have some people pushing back, and apparently more of that is on the way. There is a breath of fresh air rally walkout deal planned for August 26th at 9 a.m. Students to leave their classroom, walk outside for a breath of fresh air in support of optional masks. And this is being encouraged to, be replicated throughout the state. One of those who is so inclined is Jed Davis, who's the board president of Parkview Academy in Yorkville. Jed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Hey, Jed, Parkview Christian in Yorkville, What are you guys doing with masks? And then tell me more about this breath of fresh air walkout.
Yeah, absolutely. So this year, similar to last year, we're proponents of freedom, which means we are parental choice at Parkview. So we leave it into the hands of the parents whether or not to mask their child, which I believe, and I think a lot of people believe, is where it rightfully belongs, is with parents and not the politicians. So we're partnered up with a group of what I would call proud patriots here in Yorkville. A shout out to them. Through the local public schools, District 115, and some others helping organize this event, which is really student-driven. They want a voice because they are so often muzzled, no pun intended on that front, but they want a voice to really have an opportunity to show their disdain for the mandate coming down from the governor's office.
So the public school parents and students in Yorkville are pushing this or the lead on organizing it?
Yes, they're definitely a huge asset with their children. I mean, the children are very much the driver behind it.
Well, that's the thing. I was going to say, to have the kids walk out, you have to have the kids on board. Do you know how many kids are going to get up and rise up and walk out the door?
You know, I'd say people are awake this time around. Not that they weren't a year ago, but just a week ago, Yorkville had a rally. Pretty impromptu, wasn't really blasted over social media or anything, and 500 plus people showed up for it.
I saw it on YouTube. It was huge.
Yeah, and they marched literally down Illinois 47. It was great. I was there right in the midst of it. So I think there's going to be larger numbers than anyone would anticipate.
And just going back to your school, Parkview Christian there in Yorkville, have you been contacted by your betters in Springfield?
We have. We've been exchanging some dialogue with them over the course of the last week. That dialogue is likely going to come to a head either today or tomorrow. We're not sure what path we're taking as far as a response. We remain firm in our position. That's not going to change. But there's just multiple paths on how you respond to ISBE on that front. So we're kind of navigating those waters as we speak.
Well, when you're in these conversations with members from ISBE or representatives, what are they trying to tell you?
They want 100% compliance. You know, I've seen plans from other schools like mask on the move, not at your desk, and they don't care. They 100% compliance or it's not compliance. So that's what they're looking for. And then they have crazy threats, like especially for private schools, like your diplomas won't be valid and stuff that is false. It's not true because private schools aren't accredited through the state. So those sentences that they put out are worded very carefully to just cast fear into the hearts of parents, which is unfortunate and sad.
We've talked about in this show, too. It's a little bit more complicated than that, as you undoubtedly know. But what about some of these independent school accreditation outfits that are basically as left as the state government? And is there a concern there?
No, we're confident, at least in ours. You know, we're accredited through Christian Schools International. There's another one called ACSI, which is the Association of Christian Schools International. And both of them don't really want to get into the muddy water of this whole mask issue. So they're standing firm in their accreditation and letting schools navigate that one on their own.
Well, that's good because, you know, this is one of the excuses that a lot of private schools are using, too. We don't want to lose accreditation. We don't want to lose our tax credit scholarship funding for some of our students, and we don't want to not be able to play IHSA-sanctioned sports. What about those other two matters that I just mentioned, the tax credit scholarship funds for kids at Parkview and playing sports?
Yep, it could be a very real certainty for some schools on the tax credit. We don't receive any of those funds, so it's not a significant factor in our decision. Even if we did, we would find a way to underwrite those dollars for those families so they could remain. We don't want to get, you know, bullied into a corner to cave on our position on that front. The IHSA sports is a very real thing. I mean, people love sports. The thing is, if you're not a recognized school, like we could still play IHSA schools, just not in tournaments or year-end competition like regionals. So we'd find different avenues for that as a school. We have for years in the past. There's a bunch of associations around Illinois. Maybe it's time for those associations to strengthen in the midst of this pressure coming from the state and provide another alternate route for these families and kids.
And what about your state legislators out Yorkville way? What, if anything, have they done as schools like yours are under attack from the state?
Not much, unfortunately.
Not much.
Now,
and
I know
who are the state rep and state senator there? Refresh everybody's recollection. I like to name
we're
names.
Kind of right on the line. So the state rep would be Keith Wheeler for Parkview. But with the map being redrawn here soon, it's going to be David Walter.
Uh-huh. So those are two Republicans.
Yep. Yeah, two Republicans.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And state senate? Would that be then Sue Resin?
Yes, correct. Sue Resin.
Sue Resin. Three Republicans. And not much has been done.
No one has. I mean, we've been in the spotlight for a year, over a year. None of them have personally reached out to us.
Uh-huh. Yeah, sounds about right.
Republicans in Illinois sitting on their hands.
Tell us about so this is interesting, too. Maybe it's not novel, but statewide, but it's novel in Chicagoland. So the public school parents and the private school parents are of a singular mind. It's interesting how local culture works, to my points that I make ad nauseum. And so you all are coming together. What about the school board? Obviously, your school board. I understand, but the Yorkville 115 school board. So are school board members also reflective of the community mores and they're participating as well? They don't want mandates from state government?
Yeah, absolutely. The majority of that local board in 115 is fully behind the parents that are part of this movement without question. They're in a tough position. You know, you got the governor and Isby threatening all this stuff that I believe legally they can't do. So hopefully, thank God for the schools that are standing up, because someone needs to push this issue and just use that word that kids love to use, which is no, right? No, you don't have the authority to do this, and I'm going to challenge it, and we're going to find out.
And this event on August 26th at 9 a.m., you don't want it to be local. You want to push for this to be statewide. How are you reaching out to other school districts and other kids?
Yeah, so a lot of social media blasts. Kids are a big proponent of that, obviously. I'm aware are a big piece of that puzzle because they're very savvy, much more than myself. So just getting that message out and having it be peaceful. I mean, this is a peaceful protest, not even a protest, a walkout, a movement, giving them a voice. And really that, you know, they're afraid, the kids are afraid, hey, we might get disciplined. The coaches might come after us. And administrators have given free rein to these type of events in the past for other issues, so hopefully they will use common sense and allow the students to, you know, walk out unchastised. And parents and community leaders are encouraged. I'll be there in tandem with 115 in their front yard, like, to just show support for the students who are standing up for their voice.
Hmm. Jed Davis, again, a breath of fresh air, August 26th. So that's Thursday?
Yep.
This Thursday, August 26th, 9 a.m., breath of fresh air, 9 a.m., students walk out, get a breath of fresh air in support of optional masks, parental choice. Jed Davis, who is a part of a little pocket of civilization called Yorkville that exists in Illinois. You may not have heard of it. Jed Davis, board president for Parkview Christian in Yorkville. Jed, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Want to get to that OSHA matter for all those businesses that want to act as organs of the state, fold right in and make corporate policy based on whoever's the most frightened, just like the state does for all of us. But first, we have to address this postscript on Chicago police officer Ella French. Such an indication of who some people are. And it's as disquieting as it is, it's ultimately beneficial when they make sure everyone sees it. Ella French had this memorial wreath at the Thompson Center, State of Illinois building downtown.
Yeah.
Behind a rope, you know, in front of a art piece. And someone filmed themselves walking up to the wreath that included a picture of Ella French, taking the picture off, crumpling it up, and throwing it on the ground. Now, that actually, desecrating a memorial like that is actually a class 4 felony. And so there is...
Did they find the person?
Well, the person I saw on social media...
That's disgusting.
That she filmed herself doing it for the purposes of what? Showing it to everybody.
Yeah, and trying to look at me and I hate cops.
This person posted it, then people got wind of it. Then apparently she took down all her social media accounts. But it's more likely than not that she was identified. I was sort of tagged on the tweet by some of our friends on Twitter who follow this stuff, thankfully, more closely than I do, catch this stuff. It's this young socialist woman.
If I watch, I'm going to get sick, right? I'm going to be mad.
Yeah, I think so. But it tells you who they are. She's making a big statement about how we hate police and what it's pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. Isn't that the BLM chant, that it's good that they're dead, that cops are dead? Okay. All right. I'm of two minds on whether or not to identify her based on the evidence that's been presented. But you know what? Since she's such an out and proud socialist, and since she took down her social media accounts, it's sort of evidence of a guilty conscience.
I'll call her out.
Yeah, I will. That she works for an agency here too. Let me get this for you. This woman named Anna Kochakian. That's who was identified. She works for a company called Clocked In. And apparently she also is a DePaul University graduate. Well, that certainly makes sense.
Remote community engagement and recruitment. Yes. Mm-hmm. Clocked In.
Yeah. The evidentiary chain, if you will, she posted this video on her Twitter account. When it was discovered and imposed, she locked down all of her social media. Uh-huh. She is also, just to give you an example of some of her work, perhaps that informs, there was this piece at Midwest Socialist, MidwestSocialist.com, to make a movement last, authored by the same woman, Ms. Kokokian, that has also been taken down from that site. Somebody else posting, she changed her handle multiple times when she thought no one was looking, and somebody was looking. She also apparently was a women's studies major.
Of course she was.
Between the MidwestSocialist.com diatribe on the socialist movement and women's study major, combined with what these individuals on Twitter seem to have captured, I think it's more likely than not that she at least is a person of interest, and I hope CPD follows up.
Well, do you think she's going to get fired from her job? I mean, don't forget, people who were at the Capitol, not inside the Capitol, on January 6th were fired for their jobs. That real estate agent, Amy, I can't remember her last name. I know her first name was Amy. I mean, do you think that's going to happen here?
I don't know. Why don't you call Clocked In and find out?
You know what? I will.
Clocked In.
I'll put that on my to-do list.
They're like a Chicago-based, I guess they're some sort of virtual... the gig economy for business, blah, blah, blah. Clocked In.
Is there a phone number there? Let me see. Well, Clocked In. Well, yeah. I'm going to call them. I don't care.
Diverse group of people. Of course they are. So blah, blah, blah,
if
blah,
there was
blah.
Anyone on the right, their house would be burned down. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Eric Smith is the founder and CEO, so maybe somebody can get a hold of Eric Smith. Maybe we will. And see if that individual is still in his employ and whether or not she is... been talked to by Chicago police. Because, again, it's a
class 4 felony.
I know that Kim Fox...
Which means Kim Fox.
...won't prosecute it, but that's okay. She should be put through the ringer anyway if she is indeed the person. But I think it's safe to say alleged. Speaking of Kim Fox and Chicago and crime and the death of the murder of Ella French or Fitzgerald or Frank, depending on who you are, her name changes. Keith Ellison and a couple other knuckleheads wrote this op-ed in USA Today. Voters want progressive prosecutors, and so Biden must follow through on promise to guide reform. Reform means not prosecuting criminals. Nothing progressive. They're just non-prosecution prosecutors. But he points out that reform-minded prosecutors, as he calls them, ideological leftists who won't prosecute repeat violent offenders, as we would describe them accurately. Communities rejecting fear-based narratives for evidence-based solutions and reelecting people like Kim Fox in Chicago and Larry Krasner in Philadelphia. It's so true. They are. These prosecutors lead offices in large cities and rural counties in every region of the country, representing a significant portion of Americans. Yeah. By providing the nation's local and state prosecutors with a deeper understanding of the harm of mass incarceration, the administration could push our criminal legal system to create more just policies and address its inherent systemic inequities. Sure, we can model the rest of the nation after Philadelphia and Chicago and Minnesota, as far as Keith Ellison is concerned. Catalyze new ideas and eliminate mass incarceration. That traps people, traps families in poverty, sets incarcerated people up for failure once they're released, and so on and so forth. So just in case you think that they are at all chastened by what has happened to Ella French, what has happened to Chicago writ large, what has happened in Philadelphia and big cities around the country, no, they're not only not chastened, they are pushing the Biden administration to federalize what they're doing locally. Just so you know. And, hey, Keith Ellison is right. Voters in Philadelphia and voters in Cook County seem to like this. One more Chicago violence story. We just, as I said the other day, I'm just to the point now where I'm just going to tell stories and people can make up their own minds about what they think is sensible and what they'd like to do about what they think is sensible.
Well, this weekend, 40 shot, 5 fatally. Mm-hmm. Oh, they're not, and they'll play it. Oh, the numbers are getting better.
Ashley Sanchez was killed in a car crash August 3rd in Chicago's Hermosa neighborhood. Her parents said it happened after carjackers confronted them. They left the city and moved to Aurora a year before their daughter was born because of violence in the city. So what happened 2.5, 3 weeks ago, they had just left the White Sox game and dropped off a friend in the city when they said two people in a tan minivan pulled alongside and displayed a gun. They chased us down Cicero Avenue, and it seemed like an eternity, said Alex Sanchez, I believe is the father. I called 911. They have my recordings. I asked them for help. I was telling them where we were, said mom, Araceli. The Sanchez has said the offenders hit the back of their Dodge Charger, sending it spinning and crashing into a parked semi. Ashley Sanchez was killed. Araceli Sanchez, mom, serious body and head injuries. That my daughter passed, I didn't find out until 2 weeks later. They could not tell me because of the bleeding in my brain. Ashley was about to begin her junior year at Wabonzi Valley High School. She was a talented bowler and was seeking a college scholarship and wanted to study criminal justice to become a prosecutor. So that's Ashley Sanchez, this teenager out at Wabonzi Valley High School. And
just visiting Chicago.
That's what happened to that family because they committed the crime of going to see a White Sox game in the city of Chicago, where the streets have been turned over to violent predators. And
if you don't think it could happen to you, you're wrongly
and
mistaken.
And that's who Chicago is. And Chicago is also that apparent socialist who allegedly defaced the Ella French memorial wreath at the Thompson Center. That's your city. That's who it is. You can paper over it with athletes and pseudo-celebrities and corporate titans all you want. At its core, right now, because of who people have put in charge and who those people in charge reflect, that's who your city is. That's what it is. It is a place of barbarism. Yeah, I know. There are good people doing some good things. That's not the culture. It is a kleptocratic, barbaric city. And anybody who lives in it owns a piece of it, myself included. Carl on the South Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I normally don't do this, but I did this morning after tearing up what that young lady did. I took my 30 seconds, Google Maps, clocked in, called them. None of their operators are available. And I left a strategically worded, nice, fire the woman message. And I recommend everybody do it.
There you go. Thanks for the call, Carl.
Before you share it on Facebook
or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy updating the story we were just talking about the woman who allegedly defaced Ella French's memorial at the Thompson Center downtown. Apparently, she was fired from Clocked In. She hasn't worked there in more than a year, so she was obviously fired before the incident. This is somebody sent me a screenshot of Clocked In, somebody from Clocked In responding through one of their official social media accounts saying that they were disgusted by what she is alleged to have done, too.
Good. But so, she should change her profile then. If you're gone from a job for more than a year, you might want to move on.
Yeah, well, sort of.
And I wonder why she was fired.
The more interesting thing is Clocked In. I mean, people do social media searches, online searches before they hire employees all the time. It's part of HR's job these days, isn't it? So you see missives that she posts about being some socialist apparatchik. Doesn't set off any signals. Doesn't set off any alarms for you, Clocked In.
Well, who's running Clocked In? They might be embracing that.
Yeah, well, then that's my point.
Right. sometimes it backfires.
And so, like, the hand-wringing now, I don't know. I mean, you know, sometimes you miss one. I'm not, you know, going medieval on Clocked In here. But, you know, I have so little respect for corporate leadership in the city of Chicago. They're such cowards generally, folded in to the state or compliant with for fear of whatever, losing opportunities, losing status. I mean, what CEOs in the city speak up and do anything important? Pretty limited. Anybody jump to mind?
No.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Clocked In looks like, according to their client list, they look like a fairly robust concern, like, you know, doing good business. Good for them. What are they doing to give back? Doing some, like, bull jive, go plant trees along some expressway or parkway on the south or west side for a corporate outing and call it a day? What, impose a vaccine mandate? Yeah, since we're talking about that, I just wanted to make mention of this for all those companies imposing vaccine mandates, like Cumulus Radio.
Oh, really?
On WLS. Oh, yeah. Cumulus imposing vaccine mandates over there. Yeah. Folding
well, they're
in
pro-vaccine.
With the state. They're pro-state.
Right.
Is what they are, because that's what doing that is.
You're pushing the government's agenda.
You're pro-state. You're an organ of the state.
What the heck happened to that station?
OSHA's guidance. If you require your employees to be vaccinated as a condition of employment for work-related reasons, then any adverse reaction to the COVID-19 vaccine is work-related. Hello? Hello? Oh, you thought men and women of the left, the good congregants of Our Lady of Perpetual COVID, oh, you thought the work comp attorneys, the trial lawyers, would give you a pass on this one? You don't understand your coalition partners very well, do you? So in terms of hearing about the legal exposure and so on and so forth, you go ahead and make policy consistent with your state betters, consistent with whoever's the most frightened in your office, consistent with some crap advice you're getting from some hack attorney who probably is unable to litigate or even make a cogent argument, and thus they just want to defer to the state so you push off any work on them. You go ahead and do that and say, I'm just doing it out of abundance of legal caution. Well, guess what? Somebody has an adverse reaction to the vaccine, then they're going to be on work comp and you're going to hear from their attorney. Cuts both ways. So since it cuts both ways and legal exposure is just endemic to existence in America today, thanks to the trial bar, then maybe you should just do the sensible thing. Maybe you should make policy based on most likely scenarios and best interests of the greater employee population you have. And I'm not telling you how to run your business. You do whatever you want. I'm just telling you what the landscape provides. So your excuses that you tell to other people at those cocktail parties, they don't hold water. And they certainly don't stop trial lawyers. Bob on the South Side.
Hi, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking the call. I understand the criticism that Lightfoot gets for the shootings, but I do think on these expressway shootings and I drive to Dan Ryan about 3 or 4 times a week. It's complete lawlessness. This is
crazy.
And no one in your favorite group, Dan, the Chicago Press Corps, have I seen ever ask this guy, because the plan that they have with the Illinois State Police, it's not working.
No, I mean, the police, the Illinois State Police respond to expressway shootings. They're not there to prevent them.
Well, I mean,
what can they do?
They can't do very much. I mean, and I mean, the Dan Ryan I've talked about before. Okay. I mean,
the Autobahn.
I don't want to be glib about it because of that that special ed teacher who was murdered on the Dan Ryan the other day,
coming home from a sex camp.
And this family out in Aurora lost their daughter to a carjacker. Same deal. But I mean, you know, it's not just the Dan Ryan, and the Dan Ryan is sort of a case study in and of itself. But it's everywhere in the city. That's what I'm saying. This is who the city is, from that terrible woman who allegedly defaced Ella French, to the carjackers who killed that kid in Aurora, to the gang-banging goons that were shooting at the Dan Ryan and killed that special ed teacher from Orland Park. That's who the city is. So I just don't know when the city writ large wants to confront it. I don't think they do. I don't think Chicago does, and I don't think they will. I think Chicago has almost an infinite capacity to ignore unpleasantness. Almost infinite. I mean, think of all the Cubs fans. There you go.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, thinking about the situation in Afghanistan and the comparisons to Saigon. Unfavorable comparisons for Joe Biden. Gerald Ford got everybody out of Saigon. We'll see.
Yeah, we're still working on it.
But also, you know, the positive here, silver linings, harkens back to Vietnam era too, and that's the evacuation of refugees, not just from Vietnam, but also Cambodia, which happened a year earlier. And there's, I don't know if you've seen this documentary. If you haven't, you should check it out. It's called The Donut King.
Oh, I just saw the trailer for it.
Yeah, it's about a guy named Ted Nui, who was Cambodian military, who he and his immediate family got out once the Khmer Rouge took over, and obviously we know what Pol Pot did in Cambodia, much like I'm sure the Taliban will do in Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah. History repeating itself.
He got out. He got to California. He apprenticed for a donut maker who worked for Winchell's in California, which was the dominant donut shop then. And then he started his own donut shop.
And he was so successful that Dunkin' Donuts couldn't even get into the market because he had it. He had it all.
And as he was able to bring more and more family members over, it became this franchise. It wasn't a named franchise, but there were certain things that distinguished the Donut King's operation, including the pink boxes. But more Cambodians came over, became entrepreneurs, ran these donut shops, became great Americans. Ted Noh, by the way, like, was friendly with Reagan when he was president, and he's got all these, you'll see in the documentary, there's some trials and tribulations there, and Noh had some personal...
He was broken.
He had some personal demons after he came to America and found success. But, you know, that's separate and distinct from the ultimate story here, which is about bringing people over who want to work hard, who want to essentially live American values and build something and be something in America. And so hopefully we'll see similar stories from the Afghan refugees who were allied with our troops and helped America during the last 20 years in that country, and be able to talk about success stories like the Cambodian immigration success story in California. Just this one limited one. There are many others to be told, but just this one limited one. The documentaries we're checking out, it's great. And that's one of the positive things about America. But you have to believe in American values, in our system, in order to produce the Ted Nohs of the world who come from Cambodia military. So he had organizational background and applies it to making donuts of all things, because he had a donut when he got here, loved the donut, learned how to make the donuts, and then he learned how to make millions of dollars making donuts. That simple. Although, of course, a lot of work and sacrifice and risk goes into that simple statement. For more on this and other topics in our modern times, John Tamney, editor of RealClearMarkets.com, director of the Center for Economic Freedom at FreedomWorks, and author of When Politicians Panicked. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me. And let me say, as someone who grew up in Southern California, that Winchell's Donuts are the greatest donuts in the United States. I recognize Randy's, but Ted Noy came from the right place and learning from Winchell's.
Wait, why do you like the donuts so much? What's in them? Because I've never had one.
You've never had a donut?
No, one of his. From the donut.
No, there's something about them. They're cake donuts relative to what you see at Dunkin' and some of these others. They're all just based on the glazed concept. But it's something, whenever I'm back, I always go to Winchell's.
All right. Well, don't go back until Larry Elder's
just
governor.
Just made me hungry.
So thinking about that, thinking about the Ted Noy story and this in the context of the tragic events in Afghanistan, but also in this context, the tragic policy choices and desires of this administration. Good piece by Joseph Jaffe, who's a professor of practice at Johns Hopkins School's School of Advanced International Studies, about how America looking like Europe all the time. Biden wants to raise long-term capital gains from 24% to 43%. Switzerland has no such tax. In Britain, the inventor of the welfare state, it's 20%, a half of what Biden wants. Germany is 26%. On income tax, the U.S. may soon top the scale. Biden wants top marginal rate just below 40%. If you combine that with, say, California's 13.3% for top earners, your lovely state of California, then you're talking about U.S. taxpayers paying more than their European counterparts. So the proverbial killing the golden goose, John.
No question. Let's never forget that there are quite simply no companies and no jobs without investment first. The only correct capital gains rate should be zero. Why on earth would you tax the savings investment that are the drivers of all progress? Per Adam Smith, savers are public benefactors, yet we penalize them in the modern world. And so what Biden wants would be a huge negative, which is why I don't think he'll get it. There's just no – he does not have anywhere close to the votes, and he certainly doesn't after last week. And then we're going into an election year. The odds of them passing this are slim to none. And so it's a terrible idea, but we're not going to let it happen.
Where are we in terms of impact of the extension, really of the student loan repayment, but even more so property owners, the extension of the eviction moratorium? How do you think that unwinds, even if it does expire in January? Or
have you ever heard of a worse thing? I mean, where's the Republican backbone on this? Here, Biden is acting, and the CDC is acting as though they're basically dictator, that they can just decree, they can vitiate property rights as though they don't exist. Where's the reaction? This is one of the sickest things that's happened in modern times, that these poor landlords who still owe taxes, still owe their own, need to pay their own bills, suddenly have people who have been decreed by the federal government that, you're free and clear for paying them. And so I'm hoping that something happens much sooner than January, because this is quite simply horrifying.
Well, and this is against the backdrop of in 2020, 6 in 10 U.S. taxpayers paid nothing. And the projection is 57% of U.S. taxpayers will pay no federal income taxes in this tax year. And yet we're still beset with all of this pay your fair share business.
Yeah, no, it is unreal what we're witnessing right now. How long can you continue to penalize those who are the most productive with this odd scenario that we're basically putting the funding of this behemoth on their backs? And oh, by the way, if you have the temerity to own property, we're going to add an additional tax whereby those whom you landlord suddenly no longer need to pay it. Something's got to be done. And I guess I'm surprised politically, but economically foremost, but politically, that Republicans aren't making more noise about this.
Mm-hmm. And you know, how do you see, I mean, assuming Biden doesn't get these additionally confiscatory anti-growth policies on the tax side and maybe not too much more on the spend side, but I mean, not too much more after, $1.2 trillion or some version of that probably goes out the door, gets through the House at some point. It seems like Democrats are losing patience in the House with their Democrat socialist compadres. So how does this unwind over the next year as we sit here today, do you think?
Well, notice how stocks, as an example, in one day does not tell a full story. They rallied somewhat on Friday. My sense is that the markets are recognizing that Biden's crippled at this point. He's got no – whatever agenda he had is over with. It's going to be swallowed by the tragedy over in Afghanistan. And that's not to minimize what's going on over there, but probably legislatively here, it's a signal that we're not going to have much going forward, that it's going to be taken up by this. So in that sense, in the domestic sense, it's a big positive. But let's not forget, government spending is a tax from day one, because it's the process whereby politicians allocate precious resources that were first created in the private sector. Look at the reaction already. Look at the dollars spent in response to a virus. In real terms, we spent much, much less when there was the fear that Japan was ready to invade California. I mean, we've mm-hmm. faced much bigger threats. You look back to World War II, and I'm not talking in nominal dollars. I'm just talking in real terms. What we spent in response to a virus staggers the imagination. Now, a negative way to look at it is, wow, what a huge tax. Where would we be? The unseen that you and I have discussed. I suppose the positive is, wow, we must be a really rich country that we can overreact so thoroughly to some of the smallest things that people in the past wouldn't have had. There just wouldn't have been the money or time to react to in this way.
But then you think of the big tech companies. I mean, Apple announcing that now they're not going to return back to in-person work until January of 2022. And what is that effect is that going to have economically on, you know, the neighborhoods that are surrounding these large corporations? Because you look at downtown Chicago and they're still not back yet, and they've pushed it back more because of the Delta variant, and there's smaller shops that aren't busy at all.
No, it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy that these businesses were formed, and they formed a cluster around big businesses. It's a reminder of the importance of big business to progress. Agreed on all that. But it's really sad, and the only thing I can say optimistically about it is that there's a reason that Apple and these other companies had headquarters in the first place. The value of culture, the value of people running into each other every day and sharing ideas cannot be recreated on Zoom. And so my belief and hope is that long term this is going to downtowns are going to be refilled. People need to be around each other for a variety of reasons, but it's just tragic. You see the same thing, dare I say it, in Washington, D.C. You know, talk about people who just think that they can basically take a break from reality for a time. You go into these businesses downtown. These aren't political people. They came there to meet the needs of people who disappeared on them.
Are you concerned at all about sector consolidation and the fact that so much small business has been the loser over the last 18 months to the benefit of bigger businesses? And it's sort of a de facto rent-seeking event that happened because of these lockdowns, and who was able to best bear the brunt of the lockdown, and who was best positioned to continue to do business in a lockdown, who was what businesses even were essential versus non-essential as so decreed by the government. And so this consolidation, this heightened in consolidation in important sectors, not just tech, but also financial, is artificial. And I wonder what your view on that is.
Well, it's a great question, and there are so many angles to it. So let's never forget, without big tech, there's no way the lockdowns could have ever happened, because, again, what would the left have done without Facebook to showcase how they're wearing masks all the time, even in their houses? They wouldn't have had Netflix to watch Tiger King on and different shows on. They wouldn't have had Postmates and Uber Eats to have subhumans deliver them their food. Let's go down the list. You can't have one without the other. And so are we supposed to blame big tech? I think that Amazon took a huge risk. Remember, a lot of people thought the world was ending back in March of 2020. Amazon doubles down and says we're going to meet the needs of people at a time when many thought the economy was going to collapse in a major way for an extended period. So I can't blame the big. Let's remember, a lot of the big took it in a very negative way. Look at hotels. Look at airlines. Look at the NFL. Look at the NBA. Go down the list of businesses that are large that suddenly were deprived of their customers. And so I think everyone got hit. But look, you're right. in the sense that the larger ones were able to weather this the most because they've got employees in many instances who can work from anywhere. And so it certainly was a you guys have been having me on since before the virus, but certainly since the virus. What have we been talking about the whole time? Hashtag rich man's coronavirus.
Yeah, right.
This was a tragedy for the most part. It was endured the most by the least, and it sickens me. And if any left winger ever says to me ever again that we're all about the poor people, anyone who hears that, you need to correct them right there and remind them of the disdain they showed for those with the least in 2020 and 2021. There is, if the left love poor people, they have a funny way of showing it, given the way they treated them in the past year, that basically we will go off and take a break from reality, and who cares what happens to you? You're not essential, your jobs aren't essential, and neither are your businesses.
Amen to that. John Tamney, editor of RealClearMarkets.com, director of the Center for Economic Freedom at FreedomWorks, and the book, When Politicians Panicked. John, thanks as always.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.